CliffCentral.com. Stay informed and up to date. It's the Daily Maverick Show, Tuesdays 1 to 2 p.m. on CliffCentral.com.
Good afternoon. You are live on the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central. As usual, my name is Kingsley Kipuri and I'll be your host for the next hour. What a week it's been. We've seen student protest and activism being really at the center of the national dialogue, and their push to create systemic change in higher education has really been the talk of the country for the past week. So we'll be talking all things fees must fall for the next hour, and if we've got a bit of time, we'll touch on some of the migration issues in Europe and especially how the sort of European powerhouse Germany is responding to that. But for now, a welcome to our prodigal show co-host, Greg Nicholson. Welcome back.
I don't know if prodigal is the right word. I've missed a couple of weeks, but thank you. Thank you. It's good to be back.
When you left, I think you were talking about UAC and the anti-corruption march, and here you are, and it's a whole different story.
It feels like a decade ago, all those issues now. That's how quickly the news moves, I guess.
I'm telling you. Anyway, let's get into it. Please tweet us on @DMShowZA. Our lovely social media person, Fatima, is on there responding and making sure that your views are heard. Now, we want to go straight to Wits. On the line, we'll be talking to Ponso Pilane of the Daily Vox. Ponso, can you hear us?
Hey, guys.
There we go. We can hear you. I can even hear the ongoings in the background.
Yes, I'm currently at Med School, where the occupation is happening now at Wits Med School campus.
I mean, actually, I'd love you to just continue with that. We'd love just an update on where things are now. I mean, we started last week with the outcry over the proposed 10.5% increase. We saw it shut down for days, and now we hear things have moved to the medical campus. Could you just give us an update on where things are right now?
So basically, they've moved it here because obviously, like, geographically, the campuses are in different places. So Med School is in Parktown, and it's opposite Education Campus, and then the main campus is in Bramfontein. So the students decided to also occupy this space in order to stand in solidarity with the medical school students, because they were still being not forced, but they were still, their lecturers and supervisors in the hospital especially were still telling them to go to class. And not class, but hospital, which is their class, basically.
I mean, I suppose I love that you brought up the hospital. How is this affecting the actual operations of the actual hospital and medical care?
It isn't. So, Shalom Matlake, Rahima Musa, Barra, and Helen Joseph are the academic hospitals that are affiliated with FITS. And so, Shalom Matlake is that, like, literally next door to Wits Medical School, and so students were still being, like, they still had to attend for their ward rounds and whatnot, and they still had to do that spot test. Spot test is basically like their bones on a table, and you have to say this is the femur, this is the whatever or whatever. So yeah, they're still, like, the syllabus was partially continued.
Okay.
Yeah, so hence this happened.
Okay.
Hence the occupation has moved here.
Okay. Aponso, could you also just give us an update on negotiations? So what's the relationship between the conversations between the student leaders, the protesters, the council, and the negotiations on actually having a no-fee increase for the next academic year?
The council pulled a no-show yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't arrive at the meeting that they had scheduled with the protesters, and so I think hence the whole Brahm thing happened yesterday, because students the council did not pitch up. They just sent out a statement saying that they are it's unfortunate they are unable to be there in person, but this is what they reached, and they said they will come to a decision in November, and that's when the students made the decision that they will occupy until council actually talks to them.
Now, Ponso, this is Greg here. It seems obviously the latest trigger for these demonstrations has been the fee increase. Is it 10.3%, I think, fee increase?
10.5.
But it seems to me, and from being there yesterday and everything on social media, that it's about a lot more than just the fee increase. Can you tell us a little bit about that and about some of the other grievances and that students have and the other issues they're fighting against? Because it seems to be quite linked to the Roads Must Fall the values behind that protest too earlier in the year?
Yes, but however, they're just really targeting, they have one single demand, which is that there is no fee increase next year. The 10.5% increase. However, they've said you cannot talk about the economics of affording university without it being linked to other issues of inequality, such as the untransformed curriculum at university, the lack of black academics in the institution. These are some of the things that they have talked about as well. So they are linked. They are very, very linked. But they are right now, they're channeling the fee one because it's the most imminent one in terms of it's almost the end of the year. Students will be financially excluded and students won't be able to apply and have 10,000 rand lying around for registration next year in Jan and Feb. So I think that's where most of their attention is.
Some people's reaction to this is by saying that the issues are actually wider than at an institution level. The issues of NSFAS, of the Ministry of Higher Education, the government as a whole. And so what do you say to that criticism that perhaps the protest and the occupation is sort of misplaced in who it's targeted at?
No, a couple of times I've asked the protesters, why is this just targeted at the Vice Chancellor Adam Habib and not in general, in terms of higher education, talking about the Department of Higher Education, talking to NSFAS, which, to be quite honest, I do not think is a sustainable, it can't be the only sustainable solution to students that cannot afford university. Because firstly, they have to pay it back. Even if it's not all of it, for instance, I've never been on NSFAS, but my sister was on it. And I knew she had to, because she was academically achieving, she only paid back 40% of it instead of the whole amount. So things like that. But that's still not sustainable, because are people getting jobs that they can live off of and still pay back their NSFAS loans? So I don't think NSFAS is cannot only be the sustainable thing. I don't think there are enough bursaries also from the private sector. So I don't know. It's a very complex issue. I mean, for instance, I'm a student at Pitt as well, so I've had to work for the past 2 years so that I can afford to pay my fees. I'm not sure what's happening right now.
No problem. It feels like we're on the scene.
Yeah, this is exciting. It feels like we're bringing our listeners onto Vince campus. So this is great.
Daily Maverick Show, live from the protests.
It's a broader issue about the economic disparities that exist within South Africa. It's about issues. It's issues beyond just paying the fees of school. Can parents afford these? Are students just drowning in loans and NSFAS loans and bank loans to fund their education, and then basically live in a perpetual debt for the rest of their lives? So yeah, it's really a broader issue, and I mean, for the fact that it's reverberated across other campuses also shows you that it's not just with students. This is a common issue, and when you do look at the students that are within the protest, and not just in the forefront, but just the groups of students there, it says something about race as well. It says the fact that it's black students that are economically struggling to pay their fees more than their white students at university level. So that also feeds into the greater scheme of things in terms of economic development of individuals from a racial point of view, I think.
Now, Ponso, you've been on the ground for all of these protests, am I right?
Yes, since last Wednesday.
I was wondering about your thoughts on, you know, as the media, whenever there's sort of any protest or demonstration, the media will, if there is any violence, the media will go with that angle. And I was wondering what you thought of the media's coverage of these protests, as well as if you can just tell us about, like, from your perspective on the ground, you know, the sort of atmosphere in terms of this stuff.
So there have been very, very bad reports, and by bad, not as in they're negative, but badly done reportage by other journalists, to be quite honest. I just read an article, I won't say from which website, that says that students were hooligans after the Baki incident yesterday. I mean, Greg, you were there. And so everyone's talking about, or focusing rather on them turning over the car than the fact that a student was run over. Like a student, like that driver ran over her feet. And it could have been worse. I talked to some of the students who said they literally, the car missed them by just a little bit. And so we've also seen how there's just been a lot of reports about the students being violent without considering the fact that a lot of the time the violence was in retaliation to a violent act on them first. Somebody pulled a gun on students last week, I think on the second day of the protest, if my memory serves me right. But we're not seeing reports about that in most media spaces, and I think it's alarming, and it says something about the preconceived notions people may go in with, about black bodies gathering and what that means. I think there's like a lot of times people, you know, you hear about a strike and you already just have your own ideas what's going to happen. Oh, they're going to burn tires. Oh, they're going to maybe start burning a school or whatever, without having a cultural proximity and an ethnographical background of what happened before that. So I think that's the biggest problem. Yeah, and it is problematic, and I think VIT students have been calling them out, and power to social media where they've been able to write their own story as well. And not to blow our own horn at the Daily Vox, but we've really, really, we have been reporting quite accurately on what has been happening at VITS and now at UCT as well, and what's happening at the university currently known as Rhodes.
Well, one of the things, as you're speaking now, I was sort of, you know, the pictures of the students around that white bucky or van or whatever it was sort of dominated the papers today. And one of the things that made me, you know, as you're speaking, the headlines could have been completely different. Instead of saying that, you know, students attack or go crazy or something on the streets, which I think most of them went on variations of that angle, it could have said, you know, motorist, it could have pointed out that it was white if that was a factor, tries to kill students, you know, but I don't think anyone went with that direct angle in the newspapers, at least.
Yes, because that's a counter-narrative, and it's easier to fall into what is already the popular narrative than try to create a different one, because you are more alienated when you try to create a different one than when you just feed into the one that is stronger and that is acknowledged more. So I think right now, I would love for the conversation to evolve from, like, after all these protests are done, to let's look at the institutions that are the media as an institution, more than just from a journalistic point of view. I think we'll find out more. I think there will be more of a story to tell when we look at institutional ideologies and perspectives, and we move away from the actual people doing the writing. I think that's a bigger issue. Dealing with, what's on the front page of this newspaper, it's just the fruit of a very, I would say, untransformed institution, which is the media.
I hear you. If you're just tuning in, it's a Daily Maverick show on Cliff Central. We're talking about Fees Must Fall. And we're talking to Ponso Pilane, who's on site at Wits right now. just quickly from social media, Boxy Girls it is, and it says, are the students behaving in a way or are the students behaving in a manner that calls for tear gas? And we saw some tear gassing of students also down at UCT yesterday. Now, Ponce, I want to ask about something that sort of you and a few other sort of, in quotes, influencers were tweeting about and affirming this idea that black women, lesbian, gay, and transgender people are also in the protest and leading and part of the leaders of the protest and the movement. Why do you think it's important that we bring this up?
I didn't hear the question. Please just repeat it.
Sorry, no problem. No problem. Sorry. Yeah. I'm just bringing up something that a few people have been tweeting and speaking about. And people have been affirming this idea, not this idea, but the fact that black women, transgender people, are part of the protest and part of the leaders of the protest. Why do you think it's important that we affirm some of these other identities that are part of the protest?
So, let's take it out of the protest and just look at it in terms of society in general. People that are from the LGBTQIA plus community and black women now, and I'm specifying black women, are at the lowest form of the social stratosphere in many instances, not in just this. So what happened is I witnessed the silencing of the women leaders, particularly the SRC presidents, the incoming and outgoing. They're both female. They're both women. And there was silencing and there was this monopolizing of speaking and exposure by Gebo, Dlamini, and Riani Pambo. I found it very problematic. Not just that, I think I experienced also sexism when Nompendulo was speaking and she was asking the protesters to sit down so she can address them. And men within the crowd of protesters were like, we won't be told by a woman, right? So it is clear that their masculinity will not allow them to be addressed by a woman. That's patriarchy at its deepest manifestation, in my opinion. And so it does exist. It doesn't exist in isolation in this like movement or in the student movement, but it exists in society as well. And so pointing it out within the movement, I think, is not just it goes beyond, like I said, it goes beyond the movement, because it doesn't just exist within the movement, the student movement. It exists in society in its entirety, and it's something that needs to be addressed.
So for someone who doesn't know the university's politics so well, one of the things I was interested in was the sort of leadership shown, and like it did look like these two guys were the biggest leaders, Vumani Pambo from the EFF at the university and Mtebo Dlamini. Why are they the sort of biggest leaders? Well, that's what it seems in terms of when you're watching. They seem to be the ones, you know, who have the most authority in terms of when I was there yesterday.
It's patriarchy, Greg, at its like deepest form. The fact that
We should also just point out that Dlamini, you know, was he lost his position leading the SRC, and Vumani Pambo, yes, he's from the EFF, but they don't lead the SRC either.
Yes, they don't. They wanted to boycott SRC elections earlier this year, and because of that, they got suspended from running for SRC. So what I'm saying is that I am not putting the blame on. I'm not putting the blame in its entirety on Dlamini and Pambo, but I am saying that they're complicit to the patriarchal system that exists within the political sphere of things, which says that masculinity will be put on a higher regard. So men speaking, and men speaking in a certain way, will be more respected. I talked to some of the protesters and they were like, no, it's not that I don't prefer the ladies, but I mean, Mtebo and Vuyani have the capability of capturing the audience. That is what we need to interrogate. Why is it that they have this capability that people are saying is not inherent to Shaira and Nompendulo? That is, it's a systematic patriarchal system that says that the highest echelons of political prestige are held for men. Mm-hmm. And hence the men will get the glory and they will get put on, they'll be put on a bigger platform than.
Sorry, Ponzo. I just jumped out of my chair when someone, I think it was a vuvuzela or something, or a loudspeaker blew. So just before we let you go, can you tell us what do you think, what's going to happen from here?
To be quite honest, I do not have an answer to that. I myself don't know. Things have just been unpredictable. Like every day, I'm thinking, oh, it's going to be a normal day. Okay, they're going to do this. And then something happens. And so I don't know. They're adamant in occupying until the university council speaks to them. So I guess that's what's going to happen. And what happens in between that and the council coming to the table again is really going to be up to the course of events during the day, I think.
Okay. It's Ponzo Pilani of the Daily Vox, live at VITS. Ponzo, thank you so much for making time for us.
All right, thank you guys.
Okay, perfect.
Ponzo, obviously we can see your work on Daily Vox, but we can also follow you on Periscope, am I right?
Oh yeah, so the Daily Vox, we Periscope if it's a meeting or there's speaking that's happening. So I'm tasked with the daunting job of deciding if it's important or not to Periscope. So we are on Periscope. Just download Periscope on your phone and then follow the Daily Vox. And we do announce just before we start a Periscope live broadcast so that people know they can, so that people don't just see the tweets and they see what is really happening for themselves. I'm doing it from my phone, so it's not like we can edit anything out. It's live. So if something happens, it happens, and that's it. So I think it's also very important for the public to see it for themselves the way that it is.
Absolutely. I mean, you're right. The best coverage is coming from the Daily Vox, so please keep up the great work. Everybody else, the Daily Vox is running a crowdfunding campaign, so please check out their website so you can contribute to make sure that they can keep doing what
they
do.
Please, we like compliments, but we love money even better.
So I must just stop saying keep up the great work. I must just put mine here.
If we had money for every tweet, I mean, we would stop our crowdfunding account tomorrow. But the details are on our Twitter page, even on our Facebook page. And we're only asking for 200 Rand per person. I don't think that's a lot. So, we'll wait for the donations. You guys must donate as well.
There we go. Greg has already pledged, so that's a start. Ponzo, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye guys. Thank you.
Fantastic. You're tuned into the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central. We're talking all things fees must fall. Just a quick comment from the Cliff Central app is from Rob Reed. And he says, good on you guys for standing behind fees must fall. Makes me so mad to think that literally thousands are denied tertiary education based on economic standing. A terrible legacy of our past. Time for privilege to go. Rob Reed, a big thank you for tuning in and for contributing. Now we're going to go switch live to Lerato Mohale at Rhodes University, part of the Black Students Movement. Lerato, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Fantastic. Lerato, thanks for holding on. I know you've been on there for a while. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Good, good. Lerato, could you just give us an update of what's happening at Rhodes right now?
The university has been shut down. It's been shut down since yesterday because students are protesting the fee increment and the minimum initial payment that we're due to pay at the beginning of every year. So, that's the current situation here.
Lerato, what are the fee increments at Rhodes? Are they similar to what we're hearing about at VITS?
Can you please repeat that?
I was saying, what are the planned fee increments going to be at Rhodes University? Are they the same as the 10.5% that the VITS students are protesting against?
We're basically, because they have not finalized our budget yet, that's also one thing that we are... The budget for next year, that's one thing we are actually protesting against, because we were wondering how the fees booklet has been out for so long, yet the people who are supposed to be working on the budget have not finalized that yet. And also the minimum initial payment due for next year is supposed to be 45,600 Rand. So it was just, we found that to be really confusing, and we were wondering why that is if the budget itself has not been finalized.
And we've seen it, we're just speaking to Ponso Palani from the Daily Vox, who's been following the VITS coverage, and we heard that it has been, and a lot of the media has also focused on, at VITS, there is a sort of cross-political and all these different groups getting involved in this one sort of demonstration, in this one fight. Is it the same at Rhodes, or is it the Black Student Movement leading it, or are there all different SRC groups in there, or how is it working?
Well, it's not the Black Movement who have organized this current situation here at Rhodes. We are in full solidarity with the students who are who organized this, and we're working together as a team to try, you know, win this.
And I think I saw pictures of your vice chancellor out there talking to the students. How has the response from university management and the university council so far been?
They've actually been quite the students and the students' demands. They've been saying pretty much the same thing to us since Friday. We had a student body meeting on Friday where they basically did not answer the questions that they were asked regarding the fees. And that's basically what they said yesterday. The pictures, they were the pictures outside the drama department where they were outside, yeah. So people were asking questions and the questions were not being answered, and that really angered students.
Thanks, Lerato. Could you just give us an idea of sort of the physical movement and layout of what's happening? So how many students exactly are protesting? Are they occupying certain buildings or offices or building blocks? Could you just give us sort of the sort of physical context of what's happening?
Well, the students, the eight entry points to the university, and the students are occupying every entry point at this current moment in time. We are not occupying any buildings at this current moment.
Sorry, that's your occupying how many buildings was that?
We're not occupying any buildings.
Okay.
Oh, you're not.
Occupying the entry points to the university.
Okay, Lerato, one of the things I've been thinking about with these protests as they spread across the country, and of course we saw protests at universities earlier in the year after the Rhodes Must Fall movement and Rhodes at Rhodes University, it's had its own protests. Does it feel like, as a student, like at the moment that you're in a moment in history, you know, you're sort of a period that might change the future of politics or socioeconomics, you know, is that how it feels being in this thing?
No, that's not how it feels. Okay. I'm not speaking for the movement. At this current moment in time, I'm speaking for myself, because we may not be fighting for ourselves at this current moment in time. We're fighting for future generations, but at the same time, what it is we're dealing with does not allow for us to actually feel such a way.
Just
maybe we will after we're done, if we win this, but not at this moment in time.
I heard that a bit yesterday at VITS, fighting for future generations. Can you just explain that for us?
Well, basically, we know what it is like to be paying such high fees. We don't want other people to be having to experience the same problems. Next year and for future years to come. So, yeah.
Lerato, we just spoke to some of the guys over at VITS, and there's a very strong feeling there about sort of an intersectional politics where sort of ideas of patriarchy and gender stereotypes are also being confronted as part of the Fees Must Fall movement. Are you feeling that same sentiment over at Rhodes where it's, you know, themes of patriarchy and the rights of sort of people who don't conform to sort of normative sort of gender stereotypes? Are you confronting those as well? Is there a feeling that we're sort of prioritizing and saying one thing at a time?
No, we are tackling all of these things at once. I mean, because they all are linked in a very intersectional way. So to us here at Rhodes, they do shine through, but we're tackling them all at once. We do not have the luxury, we do not have the time to be attacking them one at a time.
Fantastic. Lerato, thank you for talking to us. Please keep up the great work.
Thank you so much.
Okay, perfect. That's Lerato Mohale from the Black Student Movement at Rhodes. If you're just tuning in, this is the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central, and we're talking all things Fees Must Fall. So we're just chatting to different journalists and student leaders across the country. We've heard from people at VITS, we've heard from people at Rhodes, and now we go over to UCT. We'll be talking to Brian Kamanzi from Rhodes Must Fall. Brian, can you hear us?
Hello, Brian.
Sorry, I've just been informed that we've switched over. We're actually going to student leaders from DASO at Fort Hare.
That's the DA Students Organization.
Yes, that's it. Can you hear us, Kabelo?
Yes, sir.
Fantastic. Sorry for the mix-up. Kabelo, we're not seeing sort of too much on social media coming out of the Fort Hare, so I'd love if you could just give us some context about what exactly is going on there in relation to Fees Must Fall. Are we seeing students mobilizing? Are we seeing protests? What are the demands and so on?
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely.
The gathering outside, actually, the administration building in the biggest campus of the school in Fort Hare, in Alice. But the discussions with management on the issues of fees were broadly not just only on the fee hike, but as well as last week we saw the registrar's circulating an email to students saying those who own the institution won't be able to write the examinations. We took the fight to management, and fortunately, I must say, yesterday the institution withdrew that position, and all students who are registered students and they qualify in terms of the academic performance to write examinations will be allowed. And of course, this comes on the backdrop of the institution using, which is one of the issues, using 15 million of NSFAS funds to pay their salaries because they're in a financial crisis. Today, what students are gathered for is on that particular issue of NSFAS funds reduced for salaries, and secondly, on the issue of the proposed 33% increment on the registration fee, as well as the overall 15% increment on the fees.
Kabelo, thanks for joining us. This is Greg Nicholson here. One question I had, so you represent the DA Students Organization, and the political party has taken a little bit of heat over its stance on these the student protests, and there are a lot of people who are criticizing it, saying they would like to hear more from Musim Imani, who I saw is at UCT today. How do you feel that the party has responded to this issue? Has the Democratic Alliance done enough to engage these problems?
We have, and this is something I was at the higher education summit last week. And one of the things when different media houses approached us, and I said, you know, we don't govern in most of the institutions. And often enough, people just cover those institutions because either we don't have a structure existing in those institutions, they will take that thing as an overall response or involvement in student issues. But we are at NMNU, we are at COTE, and we've been raising these issues, and they have not been covered, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And today, what we have done even better is that instead of, I mean, we have started this march. We have organized students, but what we also did is that we invited SASCO, we invited PASMA, and all other political organizations, and EFF, which is still struggling to be recognized as Fort Hare, and we said they must be part of the march, so that we make this not only about political organizations, but about the students and the issues that are on the table. So we have made submissions. And if you go on our page as well, through our spokesperson on higher education, Mr. Kassim, we raised this issue in Parliament on the budget speech. The issue of subsidies decreasing from 21,000 per student to 16,000 since 1994. We raised this issue through Professor Belinda Bezoli. So we have been raising issues. We are raising issues because another big problem is that when we're talking about institutions of higher learning and training, everyone is looking at universities, but not TVET colleges. We have also raised those issues on TVET colleges about the corruption, the cross-corrupt maladministration of these students' funds, the mismanagement of funds by the institutions, the fee hikes that are exorbitant, which at the end of the day don't allow students to have meal allowances and book allowances, because institutions take this, they take their residence fees, they take their tuition fees, and what's left of that, students can use that for food allowances or book allowances. And that's what, hey, students are only left with 400 rand because fees increased last year in November from 19,000 for residents to 26,000. And this year, again, the institution wants to increase fees. And we said, we can't do that. We won't even discuss fee hikes now. We actually want to go back on what informed the increment from last year. What have they done with those increments? And if they, we have to concede, as all political organizations have said, hey, we want to find out what exactly are they wanting to do with the fee increment, for what purpose. And so, we already know.
So you want transparency. You want the university to provide transparency in how they're using their funds, right?
And why they use exactly. We want more transparency on this thing, on that breakdown. We've been working at NMMU. We are engaged now because we are governing this way. We demand a breakdown of what exactly is a registration, what is it to us, and what exactly, why do you want a certain percentage to go forward?
Of course, which is important, because if they want an increase in fees, we have to understand, you know, where the money is going for. But Cabela, I'm interested. So you're planning a march and quite, I assume, quite large demonstrations. We've seen them, you know, take off at other university campuses around the country. How do you ensure, as you plan this march, that it's going to be peaceful? Is that a key aim? How do you ensure that the discipline will be applied by students who are, you know, who are legitimately angry?
What we have done, where we're involved, and I was also leading a charge at the Higher Education Summit, where SRCs were very angry when the deputy president of the country addressed them and he just left without even taking questions. And the minister went on and they never said anything. And I tried to say to them, let's sit down and let's hear what people, so that we don't seem like we're just violent people. Because oftentimes it's only the violence that's covered, but not the issues. Where we are leading the marches, yesterday we had a threat meeting with all political organizations, and we sat down with them and told them, these are the issues, and we need to make sure that we also control our constituencies that we come with, so that we don't degenerate the issues that we have for these matches into violent demonstrations. But to make sure that only the issues are highlighted, making sure that we don't distract, we don't deviate from what are the core issues. And secondly, we are also cognizant of the fact that, and we raise this thing, negotiations come at a critical time when students are always preparing for the examination. And what our aim is, we don't want to disrupt examinations. We want solutions to be reached before the end of this week in various institutions where we are, so that students can go back and prepare for the examinations, because we've got final years who really want to graduate and go and work next year. So we are looking at one minimum disruption as much as possible. We also want as little as possible of pressure of students coming to come to the marches, disruptions in the institutions, violence, demonstration institutions as well.
Cabello, I mean, I hear you. It sounds like, you know, the demands are quite clear, and it's really something that you'll keep pushing for. Cabello, we've spoken to some of the other journalists and student leaders, and this idea is a question that I love and keep asking, this idea of intersectionality and especially sexism and patriarchy, and how it plays into these other struggles that we're fighting. Is that something that Ad Fortea, that the students and you as a student leader are conscious of sort of collectively pushing for the downfall of all these isms, so to speak, together?
That broadly speaks to a transformation. And one of the things that Fortea, because every institution as well has got its own issues. Fortea, you've got a sort of a balance in terms of academia because of its historical background, in terms of your composition of the lecturers of color. But there's also an issue of gender, in terms of, are we seeing enough academic of color coming into the ranks, being offered a post? And that's a big issue, still a big issue, broadly speaking. And the second issue is, when we look at the whole country, there's also that particular issue of we are not seeing a lot of transformation. There's still a lot of your powers or your most significant positions in institutional violence monitoring is still centered around males. And in particular, we're talking about white males. And this was an issue that was also raised in the higher education summit as well. So this issue of transformation, the issue of some of the issues that are being faced from different campuses, it might not play itself out in the same way, but all in all, there's been a very slow transformation in the institutions of elementary.
Fantastic.
But what we highlighted as well, which is a big thing, we've got a lot. There's a backlog at Fortea in terms of the ratio of lecturers to students, number one. Number two, also the issue of quality. We raised that in our manifesto in the elections in April, that we need well-qualified, trained academic supervisors, because there's even lack of supervisors for our postgraduate students. So we want, there must be a focus on, because most of the time people focus on the undergrad, but there's a lack of quality academics who are, even to this very day, still releasing papers who keep abreast with the development, so that we can, the students at Fort Hare who go there for postgraduate can meet the standards of UCT or big universities and your Stellenbosch's and all these other institutions. So that's one of the things that we have been fighting for, something that we identified when we went into the elections, and we're still fighting for that now.
Fantastic. Kabelo Mukhatosi, DASO student leader at Fort Hare. Kabelo, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me, sir.
Great. You're tuned into the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central, talking all things fees must fall. Just quickly looking at social media, we have a tweet from Solomon at isiZulu, and they just highlight the issue of objectivity in media coverage and what media focuses on, and there's lots of inaccuracies with that. Please keep tweeting us, and we'll make sure to read them on and continue to engage with you. Greg, I don't know what to say. We've talked to people across the country, different universities, and it's...
I know, I think I need to lie down. That's such like a whirlwind tour of this issue. But it really does go to show how widespread it is. Obviously, we didn't even talk to anyone from Stellenbosch or some of the... I think UJ is protesting today. I think, is it UP? Or one of the Pretoria universities is definitely protesting today as well. It's incredible how this has spread. And I think it is a new sort of... Since Roads Must Fall at Cape Town, it does feel like there is a new... sort of energy amongst the student movement. I don't even know if I would have said, like last year or the year before, if there was a national sort of student movement, and it still seems quite regionalized by universities, but this has shown that the students across different campuses, across the country, are, I think, willing to take up issues of common interest in solidarity, you know?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, we had seen a sort of Bledzi Mande, Minister of Higher Education, criticized for his silence on the matter. I think he finally spoke up, was it yesterday? It seems his key message seems to be reiterating that this is not a crisis.
But at the same time, his statement, I didn't see the press conference, but I did read the Higher Education Minister's press statement, yeah. And he seemed to acknowledge that it was a serious issue. And he encouraged university managements to engage, I think, with respect, I guess, not just to blow off these students. And he also engaged protesting students to have restraint. And I assume he was saying avoid violence while protesting. And then he acknowledged that, I think, that high fee increases significantly burden poor students. And, you know, that's quite obvious. It's basic budgeting. But he didn't quite have a solution to the issue. He's meeting with vice chancellors today, so it'll be very from universities across the country. It'll be very interesting to see whether they can come up with any innovative solutions, I guess, to this. Because at the end of the day, it is sort of a budgeting issue. You know, it's universities are short on funds, government is short on money to donate more. You know, it's can these universities cut other costs or find ways to become more efficient so they can have lower fee increases? Can the government find a way to find extra money in what is, you know, a significant economic downturn at the moment or a very slow, yeah. Slow growth? So that's where we're at, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what Blade or Minister Nzimande in conjunction with these vice chancellors can come up with, because if they don't come up with something, I think the protests are just simply going to continue.
Absolutely. Just quickly from Twitter, we have a tweet from M African at Africa 665 saying that it's a guessing game by journalists. We shall listen to the students. Thank you, Twitter. I think that's going to put some of us out of a job, but you gotta love the sentiment that you can hear it from the horse's mouth and don't need somebody else to channel it through their own biases and their own sort of preconceived ideas to tell you what's
obviously
happened.
I think that is one of the very interesting things in terms of following these protests, is that so many students are engaged, you know, deeply engaged on social media. And so they can tweet exactly what they're going through. They can show pictures of themselves being there without having to go through the media as a legitimizing third party. Second party, third party, I know. But then at the same time, just because it's coming from students there, it also doesn't mean it's 100% factually correct, even though I do think there have been inaccuracies, certainly from the media. It's just because you're a student, it doesn't mean you're going to be factual about it. It doesn't mean you don't have any biases, especially if you're a protester. That's why actually we often have journalists, because we're not students, or we're not EFF members, or we're not comrades, ANC comrades. It is important to have people there who may not necessarily be involved in the movement.
Have skin in the game.
But at the same time, I think what's cool at the moment is you can weigh it all up together. There's a lot of, so if the media says something, if someone tweets that, they're burning a car, which I think that someone did report that yesterday, straight away people can respond to that. protesters
and
who
immediately
are there.
Say no. Yeah. Here's live pictures. We're
they can
here.
Say that's bullshit.
That's not what happened.
That's bullshit. And I think that's
beautiful.
And it does, I think, raise the level of accountability for the media. It really does raise it up a level.
And it's just there's a power in a personal story. We have Lungile here, also from Twitter, and she says, "I was on S first, but still owed UCT because we couldn't pay the family contribution." Mm. So I think they were seeing just the power of single stories coming up and saying, "This is me. This is my story. I was on S first, so I couldn't do my exams, or I was kicked out." And we realize that when person X stands up and says, "Oh, poor black students are being locked out," it can't be dismissed as easy political narrative or student leaders trying to kick a fuss, because we have sort of that backing of individuals telling their stories.
And I think that's one of the key things that's come out of these protests, just showing the students themselves showing how much they're struggling, particularly poor black students and black students in general, often I think, how much they're struggling and how much their families have had to struggle for them to try and get a better education and a better future. And I think they've continued to put that on the agenda, whereas before we may just have thought, they're just trying to, I'm not sure.
Absolutely. Just quickly on, as we go into the last sort of 10 minutes on the show, I just want to quickly touch on the budgeting issue for 1 second, which we had moved away from. When we talk about affordability of education, we often see these contradictions being brought up. I'm not contradiction, but sort of dichotomies, where somebody will be like, "Why are we spending 1 trillion rand on nuclear power and we could put this many students through higher education? Why are we subsidizing Gautrain when we could put these students through higher education?" And for me, that's been an interesting sort of thing for me to grapple with, sort of an economics background, where on one hand, I feel like we sometimes equate things that are not, that you can't equate. It's like, why pay for energy? Pay for students.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I think it's great that we're looking at sort of the micro picture and saying, perhaps if we look at Habib's little spreadsheet and his budget and they're looking at that, perhaps you can't fix it at that sort of level of the problem. But if you take a step back and look at the national sort of financial sort of system, then there's maybe some solutions there.
Or, for example, if we come back to the energy issue, you know, spending, you know, an estimated 1 trillion rand.
That's like a third of the national budget. Yeah, or something. It's crazy.
You know, something like that. We could actually say instead, so we have these NASFAS demands and student funds demands. Perhaps we should invest more in coal or more in renewable energies. And looking up at those different demands on the money and the different opportunity costs and the choices we have to make. I think it's important that as a public and the media and just general citizens, that we really do make sure this is where those decisions matter.
Yeah.
If the government was to have saved 200 million rand on something else that they've wasted, it could have gone to this potentially. It might have gone to something else also important, but at the end of the day, it all matters.
And that's where corruption has been coming up a lot, and saying if you could tally up, and nobody really has a conclusive figure of how much we're actually losing to corruption. But I think it's clear that it's too much, and it's hard to ignore that if all those wasted rands could be put to good use, that maybe some of these students could actually have a higher education they could afford.
Most definitely.
So Daily Mavic Show on Cliff Central. We're just going into the last couple of minutes. Now, Greg, we were following the UCT protest, especially on Twitter last night, and seeing what was happening, and we saw some students get arrested. I think they were set free this morning, and for me that just brought up this issue of police and the role of the police in this. And it seems that they're going a bit over the top in terms of tear gas and arresting students. We saw Nyala's on the scene at UCT, and it seems that they're definitely not using concomitant force, as was the word of, was it last year, 2 years
Jeez,
ago?
Let's not
even go back to concomitant, but it seems that they're going over the top in terms of the kind of force they're using against unarmed students.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. So I was at WITS yesterday, and I was actually rather impressed with the way the Johannesburg Metro Police handled that quite sensitive situation, because the students, after marching around Braamfontein in the afternoon, they sort of had a sit-in, a little demonstration for, I think, 90 minutes on the corner of the WITS entrance there and Empire Road, as well as the M1 off-ramp. And that's such a busy intersection, and these students, I'm quite certain they didn't have a permit to march that day. You know, the cops could have come and said, "Futsek, like, we're gonna forcefully remove you if you guys don't leave." But they gave them quite a lot of time, because I was worried about that in terms of, you know, how do you get rid of, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 students? Mm-hmm. The only really way you can do it is through force, right? Through rubber bullets, tear gas, all those sort of things.
Yeah, and imagine Sabzan, they're mandated to clear Empire or clear Braamfontein and allow people to sort of drive.
Because they completely closed down traffic in one of the busiest intersections in the city.
Yeah.
But the Metro Police, I think for the large majority of it, they just sort of blocked off the roads because they didn't want any cars to come through and potentially get damaged or cause disruptions. So I was quite impressed that they didn't have sort of a heavy policing hand at the start, because I think it could have turned into chaos with parked cars there. You know, how would these students react or retaliate if cops started shooting rubber bullets? Maybe the students would throw stones or something like that, and there's lots of cars around. It's a very busy area. It could have been really dangerous, I think. So I think the police were quite restrained. Eventually, the police, after the, which is now well documented in the media, that car was overturned. Yep. I think maybe 5 or 10 minutes after that, the police came and gave them 5 minutes to leave, and they left within 5 minutes. But as we saw in Cape Town, you know, it seemed like the police did have a heavier hand. I'm not sure what sort of how those students reacted, but for me, the images I see in Cape Town of these students getting arrested, which definitely looks like it's out of hand and using way too much force than necessary. It simply reminds me of all the protests that we've been to regularly, and that we know often in the townships and rural areas, where this is how the police react. They don't really negotiate. They come with their nyalas, or maybe they negotiate a little bit, but also, you know, when a councillor doesn't come to receive a memorandum, the people get angry, the police decide they want them off the roads, they start shooting rubber bullets, and the people start burning tyres, they start shooting tear gas, they start arresting anyone they can. And I think, and I hope, that following on from Marikana and the recommendations in the Marikana report for the revolution of the transformation of the public order policing in South Africa, I hope this can also put that on the agenda, where we have to know that public order policing should be to prevent injury and for the safety of the people and those around you, rather than sort of like a heavy hand enforcement, sort of some gung-ho going in there and shooting wildly and arresting people. And so I hope that it continues to stay on the agenda, that we can reform public order policing to make it both safe for protesters and safe for citizens who aren't protesting, and safe for infrastructure.
I mean, I can't really put it much better than that. You've given us the full context on what public order policing needs to be. Unfortunately, we've just run out of time. Remember, this is the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central. Please continue to engage with us on Twitter. Download and share the podcast far and wide. A big thank you to Ponso Pelani, Lerato Mohale, and Kabelo Mohatosi from Rhodes, Daso, and also Ponso reporting from WITS. We'll continue with engage with all the student leaders and hopefully speak to some people from UCT and Stellenbosch as well. Students, I suppose not much to say except that we hear your struggles and we really support your push to have an affordable higher education and to be able to get that education with dignity that, you know, people have fought for decades and decades in this country. It's the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central. We'll see you next week, same time, same place.
Stay informed and up to date. It's the Daily Maverick Show, Tuesdays 1 to 2 p.m. on Cliff Central.